From theunts.com, this is The Unts Podcast. Featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunts.com. Hello and welcome to The Unts Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Thomas Slinger, better known as dubstep and electro powerhouse Gemini. Heading the Inspected label, Slinger rose to prominence on the back of his monster hits Blue and Feel Stronger, which pioneered the field of vocal dubstep. His new EP Mercury is available for pre-order now on his Inspected label and drops on Beatport November 19th. His US and Canada tour kicks off tomorrow in San Diego, and he hits the big UKF party at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City on December 1st with Chase and Status and Borgor. Today's show is brought to you by RDO. RDO lets you listen to millions of songs ad-free wherever you are, on the web and on your phone, even offline. RDO works on your desktop, Android, BlackBerry, Roku box, iPhone, iPad, and more. Listen to popular hits, new releases, critics' picks, classics, and party favorites. Millions of songs to play, share, and discover. Subscribe now for unlimited music and listen without limits at RDIO.com. Let's start by talking about the album. Your Mercury EP is coming out on Beatport on November 19th. How does this demonstrate the evolution from Fire Inside and Graduation?
It's a more mature Gemini now, I guess. I think that I've kind of grown out of my roots a little bit, which is kind of good. And you know, I kind of miss what I used to write. But at the same time, you know, I kind of think that I have to keep trying new things. And I think Mercury, just like the other EPs, is simply just me experimenting, trying to further my sound. So I guess the difference is, I'm trying to go even farther away from my comfort zone and try to think outside of the box.
When you're saying out of your comfort zone, are you talking about moving towards heavier sounds from the dubstep realm, or even more progressive electro house, or do you mean in terms of the actual technical songwriting?
I think a little bit of everything, to be honest, but overall I think it's more about me kind of not taking the same project file and duplicating it 100 times, because you end up with the same track 100 times. So what I tend to do is you know, I've been trying house for the first time, which is kind of new to me. I've never really massively, you know, been into it, but I feel, you know, the tracks like Second Law are definitely an active progression from what I've done. And I mean, that itself is kind of what I mean by thinking outside of the box. You know, I'm kind of not doing what I've already done, and that's what I'm proud of, I guess.
In Second Law, I'm glad you mentioned that. Towards the breakdown, I suppose you could call it, I feel like there were even elements of psytrance in there, which kind of caught me off guard. It was definitely a sound that I hadn't heard in you know, your style of music.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of a, you know, again, it's one of the more experimental pieces on Mercury, but I kind of didn't really actively look for ingredients for that track. I didn't say, hey, I'm going to make a psytrance intro or whatever. It kind of just came naturally to me from the palette that I've been building over the last few years. So it doesn't feel like it's a forced out of my comfort zone kind of thing. It definitely feels like a natural progression, which is quite cool.
Tell me the big track from the EP that's already been touted as the single, 3D Romeo. I'd like you to walk me through that. Did you write the lyrics for that, or did your vocalist Fabian sort of take the sounds that you were working on and run with it and try and add that emotional lyrical aspect?
3D Romeo is a tricky one, really. I mean, I've always tried to sing on all my tracks, and I rarely like to feature anyone, but 3D Romeo in particular, I kind of couldn't make a Gemini vocal work with it. It just didn't feel natural. Mm-hmm. As a result, we started to hunt people down, and we found Fabian, and she's amazing, and we're able to come up with this track. And I think, you know, she felt the track, and I kind of recognized that in the soulfulness in her voice, and that's kind of how that panned out, really. I think she just came out on top. above everyone else, and that's what we decided to go with.
For somebody who sits in front of the computer, you know, pens out whatever you're thinking and has a melody running through your head and it gets it from these nebulous thoughts onto the computer and onto pen and paper with the lyrics and then, you know, produces the track and adds vocals and stuff, do you feel like you're giving away your baby when you have to bring somebody else into the mix and you know, sort of hand over your track and let somebody else take their stab at it? Does it feel like it's ripping you apart inside, or after years of producing solo material, is it more of a welcome change?
I think that's a very colorful description, but I mean I don't think so. I welcome new ideas because it helps me to develop my sound and, you know, bring other people in on Gemini. So, I guess I'm glad that we did it. I don't feel like it's made me unhappy not being able to do my own vocals. But yeah, I think the result speaks for itself, to be honest. I think it's a great track.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I wonder, it's incredible to hear what you're doing with the actual beats and bass on this cut, because when I'm listening to it, the drop has such a powerful orchestral synth sound. It almost sounds like house or trance synths are the, you know, the wobbles or the big bass blasts that come in this this drop. I wonder if you were conscientiously trying to make it more housey or electro-like, or sort of blurring the lines between everything you're creating anyway, or I imagine this stuff just comes naturally to you.
Yeah, it definitely does. I'm not trying to force a particular sound or something, or even trying to recreate. I mean, I guess I started producing dubstep because I wanted to create something other than a wobble or whatever. So I guess the kind of orchestral synth, I mean, it is trance influence, of course, because it's kind of what I was listening to when I was younger. Not so much, you know, in depth, but it was an influence. And I think that's kind of actively made me use that tool to recreate that power you kind of get in a rock track more than anything, rather than electronic music. So I guess the synths that I use, yeah, they're definitely orchestral, but they're kind of an interpretation of a different genre rather than, you know, trying to recreate something from dubstep, I guess.
Shape of my heart, piece it together and pull it back apart under my skin.
Let's then talk about your musical upbringing. You had mentioned trance, but let's back up even further than that. What part of England are you originally from?
Leicester, in the Midlands.
Okay, in the Midlands then. Is there, how do I put this, is there a thriving dance music scene in the Midlands, or do you have to sort of gravitate towards bigger cities to get your fix as a youth?
There's not much going on there, really. Like, I wasn't able to kind of go out in Leicester and, you know, observe other electronic acts because there simply weren't any coming to Leicester. However, when I was at university, I think the world was more open, and that was in Leeds. There was definitely more out there because it was such an active community. You know, new music was the thing to watch. You know, it's students were crying out loud. That's all they want to hear. So I kind of saw the early days of the likes of Rusko before he moved to America, which was cool. And it was, you know, dubstep was very different back then. So I guess, you know, more than anything, university was was a real eye-opener for music culture for me, but not so much my hometown.
Did you grow up playing instruments? What sort of led you to the songwriting field?
I mean, I did. I played the clarinet against my own will for a year. I played keyboard, and I was taught, but it wasn't the piano, and I didn't really take it. I kind of always just loved playing the keyboard, but I didn't start getting lessons for a long time, and I didn't really have them for that long. It was probably only 3 years. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't enough for me to be, you know, pretty high grade, and you know, keyboard's kind of different to what I'm doing now anyway. So not necessarily, but I dabbled in those two instruments.
Sure, sure. Was electronic music, was dance music your first love, or did it sort of come into your world slowly and sort of seep into your conscience?
I find it hard to remember, actually. But I kind of think dance music kind of came about when I was about 13. I remember finding it on the internet, the early days of the internet, and mm-hmm. Yeah, that was interesting. I think it kind of, I don't know, I started listening to things like drum and bass and trance music, but prior to that it was pretty much rock bands, acts like Linkin Park and Muse as well. I really liked them, and then that kind of progressed into me liking acts like Pendulum, for instance. I kind of saw the early development of that, and I really liked that, and that's how I kind of got into it. And you know, people like the Prodigy as well, who were, you know, revolutionizing the rave scene at the time.
Crossover acts, certainly. I mean, obviously Prodigy crossed over onto, you could call it, rock charts in the US in the mid to late 90s, but certainly an act like Pendulum, bringing that rock aesthetic and the dance music and drum and bass and the heaviness and power from both worlds, that's got to be, you know, easily you can chart that progression from rock to an act like Pendulum and then, you know, follow that back into dance music. I can easily see how you could slide across the genres into something completely different.
Definitely.
And I imagine it's funny to see it all come full circle when you hear the new Muse tracks and you can hear dubstep breaks in there.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange, but you know, equally, you know, everybody's got to progress as an artist, and if that's what they're going to do, that's what they're going to do.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with your introduction to electronic music, you were saying that trance was really what caught you, and that was probably your heavy diet of trance that really ingrained you into the world of dance music?
I think it was partially part of it, yeah, definitely, but I'd say more wholly, probably rock music. I think there's an obvious projection of my rock influences in my current music. You know, I've been writing really angry music, you know, really powerful and euphoric music, and I kind of think I've probably, you know, taken instruments from trance, but more songwriting and overall feel from rock music, I guess.
Did you then take your passion for rock and writing this angry music and use that as fuel for your production, or were you actually thinking about DJing first? I guess, you know, it goes back to the age-old question. Did you want to be a producer, or did you actually want to go out and spin other people's music and you know, be leading a party, for instance?
Kind of a funny one, really. I think when I was at university, I started DJing. Actually, I DJed a little bit before that, but I was definitely doing both at the same time, but I never even wanted to DJ to other people, you know, playing other people's music. Mm-hmm. And it all fell into place very naturally, actually, which is kind of unusual. You know, most people do one thing or the other and then, you know, go from production to DJing or whatever. But I kind of was doing both at the same time.
DJing really was a vehicle for you to get your own stuff out there.
I guess so, yeah. I think it you know, I was playing house parties, but I never really tried to get shows. But I think I kind of fell into an age, you know, the pinnacle of YouTube, you know, when it really kicked into motion, where, you know, I was able to promote my music from the early days of UKF, and that's kind of what led me on to DJing, I think, because I had to do it because I needed to play shows.
Second Law from the new Gemini EP Mercury, out November 19th on Beatport.
Tell me about Inspected then. I wonder, where does this drive to have your own brand come from?
It came from Gemini because, I mean, at the start, when I was, I mean, I started writing drum and bass and I got bored really quickly. And I was just looking for something else to do. You know, I was at the point where I'd made a few drum and bass tracks, but, you know, it wasn't really happening for me in my head. Mm-hmm. It didn't feel right. So, I came across dubstep. And then I started writing dubstep. I wrote Feel Stronger, and then I wrote Blue. And then I came across Inspector Dubplate on the internet, and he was on YouTube. And at this point, you know, UKF and Inspector Dubplate had the same amount of subscribers. They weren't overly massive, but they were, you know, they had a lot of traction and a lot of heat on them.
Sure.
And I kind of just, I didn't know what to think of my own track because, you know, I didn't really have anyone to talk to. I came out of a drum and bass community. I didn't know anyone who liked dubstep at this point. But my take on dubstep was, you know, me singing, which I'd never done before, and kind of an alternative angle on dubstep, trying not to, you know, have the sort of more darker London style dubstep. It wasn't really, I mean, Skrillex wasn't really about at that point. It was before that. And I kind of just wanted to do something that was different, taking all my rock influences and so forth.
And did you have anyone to even emulate at that point? Had vocals really even entered the dubstep realm at that point?
No, I mean, I remember it was end of 2000, it was like 2009 at some point. So it was like, it was quite early days. I mean, Magnetic Man, I think, released their album. Mm-hmm. A few other people were coming through. I think Magnetic Man were definitely revolutionizing dubstep at that point. So it was early days in terms of commercial dubstep, but, you know,
sure,
itself had been around on the underground scene for a few years at that point.
Right.
But I hated it, which is why I and then I sent it to Inspector Dubplate. I said, yo, what do you think? He was like, this is great. I'm starting a label. Do you want to release the track with me? And I said, yeah. And then I kind of took on the role of actually running the label with him because we wanted to create a platform for new artists who weren't getting heard elsewhere or didn't necessarily have a platform, mm-hmm, to put the music out. So that's kind of where Inspected started, really. It was a long time in the making because we were so young. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. But, you know, 2 years on now, it's like, you know, we've got all these releases under our belt. You know, we work really hard trying to sift through a lot of people, try and find something unique in certain artists and try to bring the best out of artists. And I think that's what the label's done for Gemini. I think it's definitely given me a platform to launch my brand and, you know, give me the opportunity to, like I said at the start of the interview, to experiment. And, you know, that's kind of what we're all about. We're all about not doing the norm. So that's how Inspected started, really. So it's definitely driven by passion, for sure.
And so, yeah, I suppose as part of running the label, you get to do the A&R yourself and you're finding all these young talents. Is there any method to it? I mean, I'm sure you're bombarded with young producers, younger than yourself even, coming out and making these big tracks. And how can you tell from a single track or from even a body of work whether or not a producer is just emulating the trends or really doing something different? Or do you feel like because there is the business aspect of it that you have to put music out there that is going to be commercially viable? I imagine you're torn in a number of directions and it's kind of hard to tell who's really the next big thing and who you could sort of say, yes, this is an Inspected artist and you know, this is why.
Yeah, I mean, well, like I say, brand is all about doing different things. So we definitely look for that uniqueness in artists. So if they're copying a formula, it's unlikely that we're going to do something. However, if I see that that formula is copied, you know, really well, then I see a whole other angle to it. I see, you know, what can you do with the engineering skills and the sound design that you're able to create? You know, how are you able to develop that as an artist? And sometimes, you know, you end up looking at artists for their uniqueness, but then sometimes you look at them for their skills as a producer from an early age, because you can kind of develop them into, you know, an act that, you know, is different. You know, you can nurture them, not force them, but nurture them into something that, you know, will gain traction. Because I think ultimately now the internet is wide open, and now that, you know, Skrillex has won however many Grammys, you know, it's given everybody a door to do something new and get into that, whether it is a commercial world or an underground world, it doesn't matter. It's more accessible now. So from my point of view, you know, what I look for in an act is just something different and a real drive to get that out there. And I think you kind of recognize that straight away when you start talking to them. But you can really hear it in the music. I think, you know, you just it's not hard if it's on UKF dubstep. If it sounds like UKF dubstep or even UKF music, I'm kind of like, well, you know, that's great. But if it's done really well, then, you know, we could probably do something. But we do get sent a lot of demos and we listen to most of them, but we end up kind of finding people ourselves and really wanting to work with them. I think it's probably the best way, actually, because we spend a lot of time sifting through SoundCloud, which is probably the best library on earth to find new acts. It really is.
Absolutely.
We found quite a few people through there.
Losing My Way from the new Gemini EP, Mercury. Pre-order it now on iTunes.
Your U.S. tour dates begin tomorrow with a stop in San Diego at Voyeur, and then you're sort of flying, crisscrossing the states with dates in Georgia, Colorado, and then you head up to Canada for a string of dates. At this point, and you've been to America a number of times, and you've played around in various pockets in both the UK and the States and Canada and across Europe. And I wonder, at this point, is there any difference between crowds, regardless of whether they're in the southern United States or out west in LA or up north in Canada? Is everybody really the same crowd-wise, audience-wise? Just because, you know, when everybody's listening to the same stuff on the internet, everybody's demanding the same sort of sound or you know, leaning in the same direction, whether it's progressive or you know, heavier dance music, whatever it is. Is there just one global community now, essentially, when you go out and play?
I think it's becoming more and more unified. But from what I've seen, it can be different. But I mean, I don't necessarily think that's a sort of a national thing in, you know, just North America. I think that's worldwide. You know, every country I go to is different. You know, everybody kind of learns their own way to dance to the music or whatever. So I think, you know, crowds do vary massively. But it kind of feels now that sort of, I hate to use the word, but bass music is kind of, you know, you're getting a lot more full spectrum lineups where you have everything from glitch hop to dubstep to drum and bass to electro house or whatever. You know, I think it becomes unified and that's kind of what I'm seeing with crowds now, and they kind of know how to react to different genres of music, which is great. And that's definitely a global thing. But in the US, I think, and Canada, sorry, I think it's definitely East and West Coast that I see the biggest difference. I think East Coast is kind of great. I mean, I feel like new music is appreciated more in the East Coast. I can definitely get away with more, I feel. But in California, it's a lot more laid back. And it kind of feels a little bit more hip-hop influence, mm-hmm. in parts. But, you know, I think yeah, I think it varies massively.
That's interesting. You know, drum and bass was huge in Canada 10 years ago, but it was, you know, in very small pockets in the U.S., popular and in more metropolitan areas, obviously. But you know, when you go to Canada now, are you seeing mostly kids out in the audience, or do you see a wide array of ages with your fans, especially since you do dabble in drum and bass?
I definitely think I see everybody for sure. It's not definitely not just kids. I think for some acts you get a younger audience or an older audience, but I kind of think Gemini can't still be all it's kind of all over the place. There's a bit of everybody there at the shows, especially in Canada, for sure.
Sure, sure. So tell me, you're sort of closing things out December 1st at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York for the big UKF party, Borogor, Chase and Status. I mean, this thing is going to be huge.
Yeah, it should be really, really cool. I love big lineups, especially in North America, because it gets a lot of attention. You know, those things don't really happen. Well, they haven't happened very often. They're happening more now. But, you know, UKF in particular, you know, it's kind of one of the first bigger parties in North America. So, it's, you know, it's really exciting, especially in New York. So, yeah, it's great.
And I imagine this is big for you because not only does UKF mean a lot to Gemini, but also to the sound and the expansion of bass music from the UK into the United States. You know, not single-handedly responsible, but certainly part of that huge YouTube boom that really pushed the music out there globally.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I have a lot of respect for everybody at UKF because it is one of the, you know, major players in you know, our lives now, I guess. It's kind of pushed a lot of people into places that they weren't before, and I'm really grateful that, you know, it is so big in the US because, you know, as I knew that, you know, it's just kind of, it's grown so fast in North America, and I think it's really, really exciting to see that UKF has played a big part in that because, you know, it's a gateway to bring in new music, and it's really exciting.
Absolutely. Well, we're excited ourselves about not only the Mercury EP coming out on November 19th on Beatport, and then your tour that kicks off tomorrow, but also this big UKF party in New York City at the beginning of December. Thomas Slinger, Gemini, thank you so much for being on the UNS podcast. It was a joy.
Thank you for having me.
Robots from the new Gemini EP Mercury closing out today's show. You can pre-order the album now on iTunes. It drops November 19th on Beatport. Catch Gemini on tour in the US and Canada beginning tomorrow in San Diego. The run concludes with a massive UKF party at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City on December 1st. We've got fan club tickets for sale at tickets.theunce.com. Pick yourself up some tickets for Iodo in Lafayette, Indiana at the end of November, and the Beginning of the World party at the Parish in Austin, Texas on December 21st, featuring the Noddies, Warriors, and Blockhead. Tickets are only $21.12, so grab those at tickets.theunce.com. We've got even more deals on the way for you, so keep it locked. Please visit theunce.com for news, artist profiles, tour dates, and now tickets to some of the biggest shows across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review, tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's anand@theunce.com. Join the conversation at the UNS podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week. Fill my sockets as we talking about